As you all know, over the last months, I've been kind of had the series on the kingdom and felt to stop that last message last weekend, and it left me in a quandary where to go. I was talking, I think it was Sam and Kathy, about it, and it's like, okay, God, what do you want me to talk on next, you know? And, oh, okay, you know, it's a strange situation. I don't know how ministers that's been at it for years and years and years do all that. I'm certainly in a learning process. But as we went along through all of that, especially with the kingdom aspect, it wasn't that many weeks ago I talked about the what the kingdom of heaven is not. And in that particular discourse, we went over into Zechariah 6 and 12, and in that verse it says, "Behold the man whose name is the branch." That kind of jumped out at me this past week, "whose name is the branch." You know, Jesus is given many different names. We can run over to Isaiah 9 and 6, and it says there that "for unto us a child is born, and to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." It's interesting to me, you know, as we talk about different aspects, mostly probably from me, you've heard, just talking about the idea of regeneration. We can't take something that's spiritual as being born again and just have one phrase that explains all of it to us. It's just the physical world we live in and the physical concepts that we have being part of this world, and try to explain something spiritual to it, there's just not the words. There's not the understanding. So just the very idea alone of regeneration, that brings a thought to it. Being born again is another. It's all about the same thing, that you're a new creature, or what's some of the others, that we've been washed. You see what I'm saying? It's all of these different terms trying to explain one spiritual aspect. Well, here's Jesus Christ, the man. And we have these terms just right here in one verse in Isaiah. "He shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." There's just, and there's many, many, many more. Just, you know, I don't know, a dozen or two dozen. There's a poster on the wall at the church out in Nebraska that we visited a few weeks ago, and it has that said, "And his name shall be called," and then it's got all of these different names, and it's, you know, it's a big poster, and it's just scads of them in there, and the branch happens to be on that poster. I looked to make sure that was there. So today I'd like to talk about the branch. Obviously, you pray for that. Pray for this morning, please. And I don't know where this will lead. If it'll go on into all of these different aspects of who Jesus is. You know, Brother Marty opened up a little bit ago talking about the man building the house has more glory than the house, and it's showing a natural example to let us see the spiritual example that Jesus is the builder. You see what I'm saying? It's all of these things. We'll learn more of who Jesus is by all these examples, these different names or titles or positions. Each show us a different aspect of who Jesus Christ is. So y'all pray with me, and we'll go to work on the branch. Well, it's a metaphor, obviously, something that's here in life. You've got a tree. Or a plant. It doesn't have to be a tree. In my mind, when I go to this, it's kind of a tree aspect. And roots, and you've got a stalk or a trunk. branches, twigs, and leaves. Yeah, that's fairly basic stuff that we all enjoy. Maybe me more than some of the rest of you, being born and raised in Nebraska. Very few trees where I grew up, and even way less trees where Elaine grew up. Yes, we had other types of plants with all that. Wouldn't like we lived in the Sahara Desert and never saw a plant, but the tree aspect of it was just very limited. And I remember moving to Georgia, and even yet, it wasn't that many months ago, I just laid down out in a pine straw under these big old pine trees, and they're just so straight. I mean, it's just fascinating to me, because in Nebraska, there's so much wind. If you do have a nice-sized tree, it ain't straight. Usually, they lean a little bit to the northeast because the prevailing wind's out of the southwest and blowing them that way. And they're, you know, twisted and gnarled. You lay underneath one of those trees, it's just, there it is. The trees are just so straight. And, I mean, it's just like they're reaching to heaven to get that sunlight. It's just fascinating to me to get to see that. So we're taking this metaphor, the scriptures are. And the first thing I think of as far as a tree is concerned in the metaphor sense, how do we use that as a metaphor with us today? Not in a spiritual sense, just in a natural sense. It's become very popular over the last several years to research your family tree and trying to look at, you know, your roots, where you come from, you know, your lineage. Some folks don't know, you know, even where they may have come from. If you're, you know, what part of Europe, maybe since we're all mostly white here. What part of Europe you come from? Where did you come from? Those kind of things. That's the idea of a family tree. You know, the joke is, Brother Marty, you know, talks about our family and some weird situations in our family. And he said he thought Kentucky, they didn't have many branches, but Nebraska's worse. Well, he's right. Nebraska's worse. You can't have branches if there's no trees. You know what I mean? That's kind of the rhetorical question I go back with him on. But you get the point, the metaphor of the tree and that idea that we use. So we take that to scriptures, and you go to the Old Testament especially, but it definitely carries right on into the New Testament as far as this idea of a family tree, a family genealogy. It was much more, with Israel, very important to keep up with your tree. You know, it started out with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I mean, boom, boom, boom. There you go. And just over and over and over. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. I mean, it's starting to, here's this line. Here's this tree coming. A family tree is being started. And then you get to where there's the 12 sons. I won't name them because I can't do it without looking it up. But now this line is branching out. And each one of those becomes to be called tribes. Each one of those branches, each one of those tribes, they became very much attached to who they were. And yet they knew they were all brethren, but they became very attached that I'm of this tribe or I'm of that tribe. And even you get to the Apostle Paul in the New Testament when he's talking about who he is and his identity. And what did he say? One of the things that he is, I'm from the tribe of Benjamin. Well, there was some pride to be had because he was showing his credentials as who he was as a person and talking about that concerning his service to God. He was a Pharisee. He was at the top of that system of religion. At that time, he was the top dog. He was a Pharisee. He was talking about of the tribe he's with. Well, you know, maybe the tribe of Judah would have been, as far as lining all the tribes out, maybe the tribe of Judah or the branch of Judah would have been higher than Benjamin. But Benjamin's right up there. Why is Benjamin the tribe considered that? Well, it's only one of the two tribes that when the division came, clear back with, I believe it was Rehoboam, it was Solomon's son, when Israel divided in 10 tribes to the north and 2 to the south, and it was Judah and Benjamin. And Benjamin, they were zealous. They were sometimes so zealous they messed up, and you can go back and read some of that stuff in the Old Testament, but they were zealous folks. Their tree had a component to it that was desired. In the Old Testament, the ideas of your family trees was thought more of than just the individuals. It was bigger than the individual. The individual, instead of saying, this is who I am, kind of like the Apostle Paul was doing, but the Apostle Paul went back and said, no, I'm of the tribe of Benjamin. And that bolstered him up some. In today's world, it seems more like that we just try to bolster who we are up, kind of individual aspect. But in those days, in that thinking, it was you were trying to bolster your family tree. You were trying to not tarnish your family tree. And I think it had a lot more to do with the aspect that families lived in the same area. When I went to Germany and researched our family tree and was so blessed to, within like 30, some people spend a lifetime trying to find, you know, their family roots and their tree, how far back they can go. It took me about 30 minutes to get 500 years of history. You know, that was just absolutely wild to me because somebody else had done all the work, and I was there in their home. It turned out to be like a cousin eighth removed, or however you'd count it. But his daddy had done all this work with a family, a Habgewock's family, out of Buch, Germany. And there's a little church there that we actually the next day went and looked at. But here's this family tree that his daddy had worked out. And we knew that my great-grandfather, Johann Habgewock's, had immigrated from Germany to America. I knew the dates of his birth and all that. And so we're looking at all these names on this tree. And boom, here he is. And it showed, you know, that his birth date was, I forget the day and the month, but 1850. And there it was, my great-grandfather. And then there was something German written under it. Obviously, we're in Germany. And I said, well, what's this say underneath this man's name? And said, immigrated to America. Well, I knew I'd found my family. You see what I'm saying? I'm connected now. And all of a sudden, that minute of connection, well, here we were in 2006, and you go back up to the guy at the top, which was the start. No, he was here at the bottom, Jacob Habgewock's, 1488 is when he was born. 500 years of history, just click. You see what I'm saying? Like that. There it was. But the point I'm trying to say is the reason that was somewhat easy for me, but especially easy for the fellow that put it together, was that just down the road, you know, 20, 30 kilometers, was this little town of Buch, Germany, and it had a little Lutheran church. We went and looked at it, probably about the size of the sanctuary here, rock church, that had been built in 1485 or something like that, 1484, just a few years before, you know, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather's name's in the roll. And it's just family after, it just all the way down the line for 500 years. The family stayed in that community. The point I'm trying to say is genealogy and families basically didn't travel. They stayed. Obviously, some did, but basically. And all through the times of Israel in the history, and their families kind of stayed in the same community. And so it was important as you come along that you try to maintain the family name, the family, shall we say, pride. I don't know. You see what I'm saying, what it was. What about in the scriptures in this idea and this metaphor of a family? You read multiple times in there where women were that had been married. I think of Hannah, Samuel's mama. She was barren, and she so desired a child. I mean, this was her very every thought. And went petitioned God year after year after year. And the Lord was merciful and blessed her with Samuel and then other children later. But the idea is, in one of the ideas, I don't think it's all of it, but one of the ideas is their little branch off of whichever tribe they came from with her stopped. If she had no children, it wasn't adding to the family tree. You see what I'm saying? There was no spreading out to where there'd be more leaves, more twigs, more leaves in the family. It just stopped instead of having children and spreading and being more of a family. So I think that definitely had some more to do with it. A good family name is so important. My uncle Bill Harris lived in the same town where my dad, mom and daddy did. And I remember my first cousin, John Harris, had moved away for a long time. Uncle Bill lived at Cozad for years. And when John came back to Cozad, and not having been there for a lot of years, people had kind of forgot who he was. And yet he said, it was so amazing to me when I went in the hardware store and they say, "Are you Bill Harris's son?" I go, "Yeah." "Oh, we'll open you up a line of credit right away." They didn't even consider who he was. They didn't look at his background. He was just Bill Harris's son. And we're able to open it up. He goes somewhere else. Same thing again. At different stores in town. My brother, Dickie, which, you know, most all of you know, moved to Franklin, North Carolina for a few years to pastor a church there and decided to build a house. Well, he opened a line of credit at the hardware store and the appliance store and the lumber yard and all these places. And he still needed some other financing, so he went to the bank. And the Primitive Baptist at one time had such a good name about them that if you went to the bank to get a loan, they would probably do it unsecured, because they knew that if the man himself didn't pay for it, the church would stand behind him. It was just well known in that. And I'd heard that from years and years ago. Well, my brother shows up at the bank at Franklin, North Carolina, talking to the bank president about getting a loan, building a house. President wants to know some about him. As soon as Dickie said, "I've moved here to pastor Franklin Primitive Baptist Church," he's like, "Oh, well then, we don't have any further to talk about. What I'll do is I'm going to loan you enough money. You can go pay off all those other places of credit at the hardware store and at the appliance place and at the lumber yard. Pay them all off. You'll just have one place." And didn't even have it secured. Just from a good name. You see what I'm saying? Solomon talks about a good name. A good family tree, a good family line is greater than having great wealth, great riches. Solomon tells us that. It's important as far as that's concerned. So here's that idea of a tree. And of course, you just the natural aspect of the metaphor of what it is, and then kind of get into that. But there's other aspects to it in the husbandry of a plant. You know, people know how to propagate plants. I don't. I kind of tease folks that I used to have some green on the end of one thumb, and I cut that off. Literally cut the thumb off. Of course, what do you green on? But you know what I'm saying. I just can't keep plants alive. We had two beautiful lilies, peace lilies given to us when Daddy died. The churches was one of them. And I about killed them things. I sent them home with Jim and Judy for, a year or two to get them back to life. And they're getting about to where we need to send them back home with Jim and Judy. I'm just terrible at husbandry. Of course, husbandry is a broader term than what I'm using it. It's with animals and or plants. So, of course, I'm looking at the plant side of it. Obviously, I'm involved in husbandry, which would be keeping honeybees. It's a different, totally different aspect. But we're, you know, talking about the plant side of it. And you know, in that, there's just so many ways. And it's fascinating to me. I was reading some article the other day, just a little thing, talking about the aspen trees in Colorado. If you've never seen those trees in the fall when they're yellow, it's gorgeous. I know you two have. Anybody else seen the aspen trees in Colorado in the fall when it's yellow? Yeah, there we go. Sister Gail has. It's just gorgeous. It's like being up in the Smoky Mountains in the fall, and there's all the different colors. This is just bright yellow. It's just gorgeous. Well, I didn't realize those trees, to me, they look like a lot of individual trees. They say it's the largest living organism on planet Earth because they're all interconnected in the roots. That actually, when they take DNA from this tree and go 20, 30 miles over here and get the DNA, it's the same DNA. It's the same tree. You see what I'm saying? And so, yes, they go up and they have some types of seeds, and trees can come from it. That's a different seed. But they also, their roots go along so far and pops up, and here's another tree. And then that one goes out, but it's all the same tree. It just manifests itself in different places. So when you go out to Colorado and there's one of those big valleys, it's just you know, miles and miles of aspen trees. It's literally, from what I read the other day, one tree instead of the giant sequoia that's you know, 30 or 40 foot around and just one. You know, I look at that and I got, whoa, that's a tree. I never thought about sitting back at the aspens and saying, whoa, that's a tree, you know. But I guess I need to next time I am in Colorado and see that. I'll probably think of it. But there's you learning all the different intricate aspects of trees, of planting them, and especially when we get down to grafting, because the scriptures do talk about that. How nourishment comes out of from the roots. The roots are down in the ground and drawing in the vitamins and the minerals and the water and sending them up the stem, sending them up the trunk, whatever, the vine, and getting out to where it gets finally to the leaves where photosynthesis can take place. When we lived in Texas for a while, the property we lived on was my daddy's. It had been an old orange grove. And they'd cut down some more of the orange trees, and Daddy'd build a house and a warehouse. And so we kept our honeybees, or he kept his bees, Nebraska half the year, South Texas half the year. And Elaine and I's first several years of marriage was, you know, in Nebraska. And then in the wintertime, we'd go to South Texas because I was working for my daddy, keeping up with the bees. And you all know that my sense of humor is off a little, not much. It's okay, sense of humor. And so somebody had come to visit us in South Texas that wasn't used to orange trees. Well, you need to know which tree your orange is coming off of is a good idea. The original orange tree was sour, maybe more sour than a lemon. Most of you don't know that. And somewhere along the way, somebody found a sweet orange. And they start grafting off of that, taking shoots off of that or little twigs off of that and going and grafting it on other trees, whatever. Well, they soon learned, the men in husbandry, that the sour orange tree's roots were much more, had more vitality and could live through droughts way better than taking the seed from a sweet orange tree, sweet fruit, and planting that those roots were weak and couldn't withstand harsh climates. So what they'd do is they would start these sour orange trees and then graft in a sweet stem on top, and it grows into this beautiful tree. And just all the fruit on it are just lovely fruit. So we had these Valencia oranges all around the property, and you'd peel them and eat them. And if you ever get a citrus fruit that's hung on the tree, not picked in December for your Christmas, and it's green and hard, but wait over till about the 1st of April when it's ripened on the tree, it's just the sweetness is totally different. It's a different fruit. I don't eat citrus out of the grocery store because I'm used to the other way. So anyway, folks had come visit us. So I'd go pick a good tree, a good orange, and peel that thing and eat about half of it and have half in my hand, all right? Then I'd go pick a sour because there were times we had freezes. 1962 was a hard freeze in South Texas, and it froze down below the graft on that Valencia orange tree. So when the tree grew back, over you know, 20 years, beautiful tree, beautiful fruit hanging on it. Looks like the Valencia over here, but that thing's worse sour than lemon. If you don't believe me, ask Elaine. It is bad sour. So I'd go peel one of those, throw away half of it. So now I got two halves, you see what I'm saying? And I'd eat one of the good ones, and who's ever visiting says, well, here, have some of this orange, it's delicious. And I throw some more in my mouth, so get them to, you see what I'm saying, isn't that? I told you, my humor's not off much. And just, can you imagine biting into something like that? But the idea is the husbandry aspect, grafting into. That's the point that, sorry for all the other garbage that went through. Anyway, we're here to learn about Jesus, not about growing sour oranges. So the first thing I read there was out of Ezekiel, and it said that he was called the branch. Why is Jesus called the branch? Why is the metaphor there? Well, I think a couple of reasons, probably more than what I've come up with, but there's an aspect of it that it's a metaphor for the family line that Jesus was going to come from, okay? And it's also aspect of being a mediator between God and man, the branch. So first off, we'll talk about this aspect of the prophecy of being in the line of David. God made a covenant with David, made a promise to David, King David, and said, David, you've been a good king, and I'm going to establish that all the kings of Israel from now on, forever, will be of your lineage, literal of his lineage. So in David's family tree, David had 20-some children. One of them was Solomon. So here's David, and you go to Solomon, and then from Solomon you go to the next, and I don't know, you can go back and read what the line is all the way to Jesus Christ. But there's the line going to Jesus. It's God made this covenant with David and used the idea, and later he's called the branch. Well, what happened is that, so you had David and Solomon, and I think it's Jeroboam is the next one, not sure, and boom, 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 all these different kings, up until the time when Nebuchadnezzar came to Israel to wipe them out and to take them over and hauled, you know, lots of them, cleaned out all the gold and good stuff out of the temple, hauled it all back to Babylon. And that's the end of the kings. It looks like it's cut off. This looks like a tree that's just been sawn off. We see that around here a lot, just a stump out there. And here's that stump sitting for years and years, for hundreds of years, to where this line of David's family is actually kind of forgotten about. It's not, you know, in David's time and Solomon's time, I was like, whoa, you're from the family of David and Solomon? You know, that was something to be admired. Like the Apostle Paul saying, I'm from Benjamin. But it's been cut off. Well, let's go to Isaiah 11:1. Now, I'm talking about King David a good bit. Who was King David's father? Jesse was King David's father. So it uses him in this, but you'll get the picture. And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch, capital B branch, shall grow out of his roots. So what's the metaphor here? Well, it's saying that there's been this cutoff. There's a stump that's all that's left. As we talked about, when Nebuchadnezzar came to Babylon, he cut that line of that tree off. That maybe it was that branch of the tree, but the Bible talks about it being the tree, and it's cut off. There's just a stump left, and there's hundreds of years. And Isaiah's prophesying and said, there shall come forth a rod. In other words, a stem, a new branch. A sucker root? Not, that's not what it'd be. But anyway, there's this new sprout coming out of this stump. And it shall come out of the stem of Jesse. The branch shall grow out of Jesse's roots. Here's a tree that's been cut down, and far as all intensive purposes, us looking at it, it's over, it's done. But God had made a promise, a covenant with David, and said, out of him will be a king that'll last forever. And here's the prophecy, and it calls Jesus the branch. Well, a branch has got to have roots, does it not? You see what I'm saying? The roots is Jesse. And here's this new tree coming forth. And the picture that I see is here you have King David. And all the other kings of Israel were put up aside and see if they measured up, if they were as good as David was. Obviously, we know David was a sinner. David had his problems. But they were all measured against David and said this king measured up to how good David was, or this king did evil and wasn't like unto to King David. All of them were measured to King David. And if you read about King David, there's chapters and chapters about King David. Of who he was as a human, he tried to be an honest man. Obviously, we know that the Bible is very honest in who he is, and we know all men are sinners. But here's King David, and he's trying to be an honest man. And his lineage, his tree, is one that you wanted to be a part of. You wanted to be in that line. And David, as king, wanted the good of all of Israel, all of the children of Israel, all that were under his kingdom. We've been talking about the kingdom. Well, here's David's kingdom. And his desire was for the good of everybody. And what he did as a king and doing good was in the thought of helping. All of that was under his authority. Well, now you can take from that, maybe spiritualize it a little bit. But was not Jesus is now another King David, so to speak. He's out of the root of David. He's come forth a new tree. And Jesus is king over all of his kingdom, all of his elect, all of the chosen people of God. And is his desire for all their good? Well, absolutely. And so you can see that metaphor, that sprout, that root that's growing up. Jeremiah talks about it. And we can read there, Jeremiah 23:5. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, and I will raise unto David a righteous branch. In other words, here we are talking about Jesus again. It's the same story, just being prophesied by a different prophet. You know, one thing I thought about, here's God keeping the promises of David, the promise he made to David, even though it was hundreds and hundreds of years later. God's made promises to us. And I think we can rest on the aspect that it may seem like this ain't happening. You know, I don't see God's hand in my life. God's not going to. If he's made a promise, he's going to keep that. Well, let's move on. I know I've spent way too much time on this aspect, because the beautiful part, I think, is in the aspect that's brought out in the New Testament, mostly. And let's go to Romans 11:17. And we'll just try to read that quick. We're getting into a different aspect of why Jesus is a branch in this metaphor. Romans 11:17. So to set this up, Jesus has been preaching. He's been crucified. He's dead. And the apostles are out now, and they're spreading the gospel and establishing churches. And the Jews, by and large, obviously there's some, but as a nation, they've rejected Jesus Christ. And so here's the apostle Paul talking to the folks at the church at Rome. And so he's getting into this aspect of the Jews and the Gentiles. And he said, if some of the branches be broken off, talking about the Jews, and thou, being a wild olive tree, talk about the Gentiles, were grafted in among them, with them, partakest of the root and fatness of the olive tree. Boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off, and thou standest by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared the natural branches, take heed lest he also spare not thee. So here's a picture of some kind of bush, tree, whatsoever. And the branches and all this out here are considered the Jews. But the Jews, for hundreds of years, 1,600 years probably, reject the Lord. They want to go their own way. Yes, they come back for a few years, but then they go their own way again. And by the time Jesus Christ shows up and he's preaching to them, it's just this total, as a body, not every individual, the body, they reject Jesus Christ. And so the analogy is here, the metaphor, is those branches were broke off. And the Gentiles were grafted in. Gentiles are the wild olive tree. Gentiles are the sour orange I was talking about. This is contrary to nature. What I was telling you about, they had a sour root and put the sweet orange on top of it, and the nutrients out of the sour orange came into and fed the sweet part of it. But this is contrary to nature. The good root with the good branches, and the good branch broke off, and they're grafting in wild branches, wild olives, and to be brought into the sweetness of being with the Lord and being and understanding the Lord. And there was some pride aspect that the Gentiles were getting involved in, like, y'all were broke off, and now here we are, we're in your place. Well, God's kind of give a warning and saying, through unbelief, it's just as easy for God to break you guys off and graft the other branches back in. It can happen. But the point of the idea is here is that here is the aspect of grafting. There's a root. There's a trunk, and that is Jesus Christ. This is the branch, Jesus Christ, and we as the wild olives, contrary to nature, have been grafted into that tree. And now we have connection to Jesus Christ. It's where we draw our strength. It's where we get who we are. It's how it is. Well, let me ask this question. If the Jews were broke off and Gentiles are grafted in, when they were grafted in, did that make them children of God? Being grafted into this tree? Is that what made the Gentiles children of God that were grafted in? I don't think so. When the Jews were broke off out of the tree, the stump, the branch, Jesus, the branch, when they were broke off, did that make them non-children of God? No, we're talking two different animals here. The thing, there's a difference between relationship and fellowship. Relationship has to do with who you are and who you're related to. Fellowship has to do with how you get along, like fellows in a ship. We talk about this with the prodigal son and his daddy. And did the prodigal son have relationship to his daddy when he was at home? Yeah, he's the son and the daddy's the father. Did he have fellowship when he was at home? Well, it's to some degree, but obviously the son was very proud in who he was and asked for his daddy's his inheritance before his daddy died. And he went off to a far country and blew that inheritance that was to be his when his daddy died. And now he's got nothing. He's in a hog pen. Does the prodigal son have relationship with his daddy in the hog pen? Well, yeah, he's still the son. The daddy's still the daddy, the father. Does he have fellowship in the hog pen? No fellowship. You see the difference between relationship and fellowship. What's happening here is, it's not talking about being grafted in, the wild being grafted into the good tree, grafted into Jesus Christ. It's not talking about becoming a child of God. It's talking about he takes his branches, already his branches. They just didn't have the aspect of understanding who God was. God had poured it out to the Israelites for all of those years. But now he's grafting in the wild grapes, the wild olives, into the good tree. And it's for fellowship. That's what we're talking about. And the Jews, because of their rejection, were broken off because they had rejected God so long. It's not send them to hell. It's just that no longer having fellowship. It's a loss of fellowship. If the Jews would repent, even unto today, in the Jewish nation, if even down to one of them repents over their thinking that Jesus Christ is not the Messiah and starts believing it, they can be grafted back in to have not life, eternal life, but fellowship. That's what we're talking about. And we can go even farther than that. Go to John 15 with me. Gospel of John, chapter 15. This is just a beautiful, beautiful picture. I love the picture here in that. John 15. I'll read several verses. I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it bringeth forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine. No more can ye, except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch, and is withered, and men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done to you. Here is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. Beautiful analogy, what I'm talking about. That's a little bit different in that Jesus says that I am the vine, my Father's a husbandman, and he's talking about branches. But we're talking about a different aspect. This is not a tree. This is a grapevine. You all know how grapevines work. You plant the grapes, the vine grows up, goes out, and you have grapes. But you have to trim it back. The only place that the leaves and the grapes are born is on the new shoots. It's not the old stalk that's come up. Whatever you picked grapes on last year and whatever the leaves were on last year, zero leaves, zero grapes. Not going to happen. But in the spring, out of maybe those old branches, are new shoots coming out. And they grow leaves, and they'll have the grapes out on that aspect of it. So what's done as far as God being the husbandman, but a man that keeps a vineyard, he goes in and trims off all of those branches from last year back down to the trunk or to the main part, or as Jesus called itself here, that he's the vine. It's the main body part. It's the trunk. If you were the trunk of the grapevine, not called that, but you get the picture. And they trim all of that old stuff off, so when the new shoots come out, that's where all the grapes are. Our leaves and grapes are produced. Where's the strength coming from? Where's the vitality coming from? Where's the sap coming from to produce those grapes? Well, it's out of the roots and the vine. And the analogy is so beautiful and clear. And Jesus is just saying it in verse 5. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing. You have to stay abiding or connected into the trunk, into the vine, is where you draw your strength. Without Jesus Christ, ye can do nothing. You have zero strength. What are we talking about? I mean, I got enough strength. I can pick up the Bible. I'm standing up. I walk around talking. I have strength. Well, we're talking in a spiritual sense, but especially in a fellowship sense, is what we're talking about. This is fellowship. I talk to some of my friends that are of a different idea of Christianity, and they're thinking that this is all about how you get grafted in and become a child of God. The branches are all God's. The branches aren't being grafted in this case. They're coming out forth from God, and it's fellowship. It's fellowship. And if you have an experience and where you've grown out of the branch, you've grown out of the vine, and you produce no fruit, well, it's trimmed off. It's what's done with grapevines. That's cut off. It's taken away. And all of those barren vines, those barren branches, are put in a pile and burned. There's no value to them It's over. But it's not like your life is just one shoot comes out. And if you yield no fruit, snip, you're gone, your life's over. That's not where you're growing new branches all the time. A grapevine doesn't just shoot one out, and if there's no grapes, it's over. Every year, there's more branches, more coming out to produce fruit. And that's our lives. We have opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to have this experience of being abiding or connected to Jesus Christ and trusting in Him with our lives, trusting in Him with the things that we need in our lives. And whether it be physical, spiritual, we're trusting in the Lord. We're abiding in the Lord. And as the sap comes out of the roots through the branches, through the stalk into the shoots or to produce the grapes, that's how Jesus Christ from God to us is. He's the mediator. He's the mediator between God and man. And our strength comes through Him, of us going, and He talks to the Lord. He talks to the husbandman. And it comes back into us. Beautiful picture of fellowship. And even in the first part, it's going to hurt either way, the way it looks to me. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, He taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, He purgeth it. He's going to even clip it a little bit, that it brings forth more fruit. Now, I don't understand how that works in a grapevine, but apparently you can go in and do some more clipping. There's going to be some hurt along the way. The hurt's on our human side. It's not on our spiritual side. This is all about us having spiritual experiences and fellowship with the Lord. And yes, if we're all tied up in this world and we get all connected into our jobs, we get connected into our emotions, we get connected into just whatever it is. Maybe we're gossips, maybe we're just whatever sin is your cup of tea. We get all tied into all of that mess. There's no fruit going to be born. You're going to be snipped off. But praise be to God. God is so merciful. He allows you to grow a new shoot, a new branch. Maybe it's next year. Maybe it's this afternoon. And trust in the Lord. If I can just do one thing this morning to say, connect yourself into the branch. He's connected to the Lord. It's where your strength comes from. Connect back into it and abide in the Lord. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, ye can do nothing. Just beautiful picture being painted of husbandry in the sense of growing grapes and the branch, why Jesus is called the branch. It's where we get our sustenance from, our spiritual sustenance, where our souls get fed. There's nothing in this world. It's dead. It's dried up. It's the Sahara Desert for our souls, our spiritual souls. You're not going to find it here. You're not going to find it watching TV. You're not going to find it in your education. You're not going to find it in your position at work or whatever that just turns you on, so to speak. You're not going to feed your soul from that. It's spiritually fed. And the only aspect of being fed is abiding in the branch. In the branch, with a capital B. In Jesus Christ. This is a beautiful analogy, a beautiful metaphor of who Jesus is. And in the last few minutes, we'll go one more place, which is where I started, which is Ezekiel. I'm sorry, Zechariah. It's the second to last chapter in the Old Testament. Chapter 6, right where we started. Zechariah is the priest. You remember that the children of Israel was carried into Babylon. 70 years go by and they're coming back. They were going to rebuild the temple. They're rebuilding the walls. And there's some contemporaries here. Nehemiah is one of them. And Zechariah is another one, and he's the priest. And here they are working at it. And the Lord is talking to him and says in verse 12, "And speak unto him, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, Behold, the man whose name is the branch. And he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord. Even he shall build the temple of the Lord, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest unto upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both. So we've got to go back to the metaphor of the idea that Jesus is the branch, and Jesus shall grow up out of his place. In a spiritual sense, Jesus is God. There's no growing up out of it. But in a here and now physical sense, Jesus started back there in the manger as a little babe. And he grew up out of his place and became opened himself up to show that he was Jesus Christ. He grew up out of his place as a plant grows up from a seed. And it's just so insignificant. And then you have, you know, look at those pine trees that are out here, mighty pine trees, mighty oak trees, and all that. He shall grow up out of his place and shall build the temple of the Lord. Well, they were building the temple of the Lord back then, the second temple. That's what I was talking about. He's talking about the spiritual building of his people being built up, a spiritual house. That's what's happening here. It's a spiritual house that he shall build up. And he shall build the temple of the Lord, and he shall bear the glory. This is so beautiful to me. Y'all been out to my place? Have you seen the oak tree in the backyard? Is that not a beautiful oak tree? That's part of the reason. I mean, we fell in love with the place partly because of that oak tree. We were looking at it in July 2 years ago. Well, it was hot, kind of like it is in July this year. But you get under that oak tree in the shade, and it's just like, a cool breeze was almost always under there. It was just, you know, it sold us as far as that tree. There's the oak tree. Well, it talks about here that he shall bear the glory. What's the glory of a oak tree? Is it the root structure? Is it the tree? That's a massive trunk on that tree. And you got all the beautiful branches. I think it's the leaves. You know, I got thinking about it as I was studying this. I've taken a lot of pictures of trees. I don't think I've ever taken one in the wintertime and no leaves on the tree. You see what I'm saying? They're not really that pretty, are they, without their leaves? I've taken them when the leaves are changing colors, beautiful, and when the leaves are green, like that one in the backyard, several pictures. It's just beautiful to me. But it's with the leaves. But he shall bear the glory. What's holding all of that up? What's bearing all of that? To where all of those from that massive trunk, and you got the big branches, and you got the little branches, and you got the twigs, and then you got all those millions of leaves hanging out there. What's bearing all of that up? Jesus shall bear the glory. You realize who we are. We're the leaves, or we're the little twigs. We're what's looking beautiful out there. We're what it is, but who gets the glory? Who bears the glory? Who's glorified in all of this? Seeing this tree that Jesus is the branch. It's looking at us, but it's when God looks at us, he sees this beautiful tree and he sees Jesus as the branch bearing. He shall bear the glory. He gets all the glory. And he shall sit and rule upon his throne and shall be a priest. Jesus is king. And Jesus is priest. At the same time, he's on his throne now in heaven. We've tried to prove that before in the past. Go read Psalms 110. It talks about that he would sit on God's throne until the last enemy was made his footstool, which the last enemy is death. So at the time that this world's no more, will be the last enemy. So Jesus is ruling and reigning now. It's not at a future time. It's now. He's the mediator between us and man. This branch, the flow of goods is coming from the Lord through Jesus Christ to us as that picture, abiding in the vine. We're his subjects. He cares for each and every one. He's the mediator. He's the he's given us his life. He gives us all the nourishment that we need here in life. He holds us up when we're weak. It's just all goes back to the branch. Jesus is the branch. I hope that in some way you can see Jesus through a different light, not completely, but just in a twist to where you see him as the branch. God bless y'all.